Bonjour, hi, I'm Pascal Auclair. I hope this talk supports you in your practice. J'espère que cet enseignement vous sera aidant. If you'd like to support my teaching, you can use the donate button underneath my picture on Dharma Seed. Vous pouvez me soutenir en cliquant sur le bouton sous ma photo. Your support is greatly appreciated. Merci.
Do you remember the story of the quail? The quail that got stuck in the resin. Yes? No? It was a little bit of a test. Here. Yes, the monkey and the resin, and the quail and the hawk. So the quail left its domain, as the story goes, and then got exposed to the hawk. And got caught by the hawk. And so I'd like today to talk a little bit about this domain as it refers to the experience not of the quail but of the meditator. I have to get something out of my mind because I've been telling the story of the quail a couple of times, and every time I'm occupied by why is it that we're blaming the victim again? You know? So the quail got caught by the hawk. It's the fault of the quail. I've heard that somewhere before. History repeating itself. So there's limits to this analogy. Let's put it, this big limits to this analogy. But I think we can still work with it. Can we? Yes. Okay. So yeah, I want to talk about the domain of the meditator. So I've talked, I think, some amount about the quality of sati or mindfulness, or the, you know, it's, we've talked about this quality. Yeah, that's the sense I get, you know, that there's duration to it. There's a, you know, the staying, there's the kind of a freshness underneath the preconceived ideas, like meeting, discovering the familiar. So it seems like there's the quality itself and what it looks at, what it encounters. And so that's the domain I want to talk about. So there is this quality of awareness. What does it meet? What does it meet to for wisdom, discernment to arise, or for compassion to arise, or for freedom or joy to arise? What does it attend to? Where does it land, this higher quality attention? Not like the superficial attention that we have usually, you know. We see one thing, we know the rest of it. Huh? You see one, oh, I know that type. Don't like that type. You know, and here we're like, let's stay a little bit just to see if we're just going to discover something else about this situation or this person. Let's stay. So let's stay on what? Let's keep meeting what? And to me it was highlighted, I would say, in a very powerful way. The first time I went to sit, to participate in, to learn meditation, it was in a retreat like this, a week-long retreat like this. And I was experiencing a lot of afflictive emotions, a lot of fear, a lot of confusion, shame, agitation, something in my life had turned sour, to use a euphemism. Is that a word also in English? Something had turned sour, and it was pretty much questioning everything, every assumption I had. Some of you know, but there's no need to make a secret of it. Some of you know it's, I can't remember now, like 25 years ago, or a little bit more, I learned I was HIV positive. And it was at a time where, you know, there was no medication yet. And some of you might have very personal experiences of this, you know, personal inside in your heart, but also maybe in your friendships or, you know, family or work or environment. So I can't remember the numbers now, how many years ago it was or how old I was, but I think I was 25. Later I'll do the count when I'll be back in my room. You know, but I think I was 25, and suddenly I was told, you know, youth, you know, eternity, 25, eternity, seems like the deal, you know, like it seems when you're 25 it's going to go on forever, youth, and health, and life. Everything was put into question, and in that confusion, that confusion led me to all these afflictive emotions, led me to a retreat center, and so it was very striking for me the first instructions, or the instruction through the whole week. Were so not what I expected. So I had the problem to solve, which was I'm going to die soon, it's going to be ugly, everybody's against me, the whole world hates me, I just got what I deserve, apparently, says, you know, the main culture, the dominant culture. What am I going to do in this situation? And the invitation that I got was, please put your attention on your nose. I was really desperate, so I was willing to listen to anybody and try anything, you know. I'd try just a little bit of, like, you know, something about abundance, and, you know, if you want it and you put your mind in the right direction, you know, you'll be healed and you'll be rich and everything, you'll be fine. And if it doesn't work, it's your fault. You're doing something wrong, you know. And so I was willing to try something else. So, and also it was impressive. I was receiving this from monastics, you know, in a setting where it was exotic enough for me. I was in Thailand, for me, from my point of view, of somebody from Notre-Dame-des-Laurentides in Quebec, you know, being in the jungle, the forest, the Thai forest, and the monks, and there was something both exotic, but also kind of a recognition of symbols, archetypes, you know, of spirituality and wisdom. And anyway, so I was willing to listen. So, you know, there was instructions like this: put your attention on your nose. As you walk, feel the steps. It's very surprising. I would not have think about this myself. It would not have crossed my mind that this was my way out. My way out to me would have been to think obsessively about stuff, to hate certain emotions I was feeling, you know, to hate the shame, to hate the fear, to want to not feel it. And then further along, the instructions were like, yes, be with your nose as the air comes in and out, be with your stepping, be there as you're eating on the instructions that, you know, we have received in the past or are receiving here this week. And at some point there was like, oh, if fear arises, just feel it, experience it in the body. Get interested in it. No, would have been my, you know, immediate response. Like, no, I don't want to get interested. I don't want to feel it. You know, oh, shame. Get interested in it. How, where is it felt in the body? Does it stay solid the whole day? Or does it move? You know, what happens to shame when suddenly you hear the bell calling you for the meal? Does it subside for at least a few seconds, you know, thinking of entertainment in this barren world of meditation, you know. And so there was this invitation to not reflect on, to not think about. It was very surprising. This would have been what I would have valued, and pretty much the only way for me would have been to think about something. And I was like, I might not need to be a need to think about in this way. But, you know, when the night comes, listen to the sounds of the night, or notice the light, or if the air gets cooler, notice this. And if your body, when you lay down your body, don't try to think about your life and your future and how it's going to end up ugly, you know. Just, if you can, just be with the body, aware that the body is lying down, breathing. And so I tried. And it turned out it was really, really helpful. It was a mess, you know, because, you know, it was not like, okay, body walking, body sitting, body lying down. You know, there was all this turmoil, these perturbations, you know, of all these emotions, and the wanting to have understood. I didn't care about understanding. I wanted to be on the other side, you know. I wanted to be wise. I wanted, or for the retreat to be finished, or, you know, so, you know, another kind of type of afflictive emotion that was running was desire for this, desire for that, desire, you know, and comparing. Do you have any of these? You know, oh, this person, you know, I'd like to be this person, you know, projecting on other retreatants or the monks, or, you know, wanting to be a monk forever, you know, and then wanting to run away in the night, escape, you know, kind of, you would call it maybe conflicting needs. I want to stay forever, but don't want to be here, you know. So all of these, and there was, to the best of my ability, the following the instructions, the hearing what was said, you know, what I could actually hear. I couldn't hear everything, I don't think so. But I could hear some things could go through, you know, and try to apply these to the best of my ability. And lo and behold... something started to open up, you know, real interest for one thing, you know, real curiosity developed for stepping, you know. I was not expecting curiosity for stepping to arise at some point, you know, and yet suddenly there was. Maybe in a wider way, an interest for the present moment, when my mind was really clinging to past. If I had done this and done that instead, I wouldn't be here now in this situation, or later, what will I do with this? How will I, you know, tell my parents and tell my friends, and, you know, how, you know, etc. And this constantly, these instructions to come back to the present. What is actually happening? Oh, crickets. Oh, stepping. Oh, heat. Oh, sweat. Oh, coolness. Oh, something else, you know, something happening. Breath. Breath took longer to get acquainted to or interested in. And so slowly the teachers who were there were giving instructions about the domain, where to hang out. You know, if you have attention, what could you do with attention that would be beneficial for you and for others, you know, that would help me along. And so there was a very slowly over the days defining what was the domain to stay in for protection, for discernment to arise, understanding to arise, for all these beautiful qualities to, in time, to start to show up. And so in a very classical way, what we're inviting attention to meet or rest on, to land on, in a very classical way, these, many of you know this, these are called the four foundations of mindfulness. The four foundations, what mindfulness is invited to rest on, the foundations of mindfulness. So these are, I'd like to do a kind of an overview of this, because up to now, I've named them in a kind of disorganized way, because that's pretty much how they show up in our life. You know, they don't show up 1, 2, 3, 4. You know, they don't show up like this. They're all there. It's aspects, we could say, of our experience, particular aspects of our experience. I would say, and I think I'm probably going to be right on this, at least in this research center here. You could think of the retreat as a research center. And actually, today I was thinking about this a little bit this afternoon, and it's the first time I've been had the privileged chance to teach, I think for a number of years, I think for 15 years now. And it's the first time it appeared to me like this afternoon. I was like, oh. In a way, what I do is almost as if I was receiving folks in a research center. You know, hey, welcome to the research center. We're not just going to visit. That could be something I could do, you know, say, show around, show to people. But here it's a little bit more. It's like, hey, we're going to stay in the research center for a week. So I'll show you a bit how to manipulate the different things, how to do research, how research is done, you know. And some of us being here, we've gone there, we've done this a number of times, many, many times, maybe more times than I have. And so we know, some of us are very new. We're like, hey, the research, imagine you come in the lab, you know, for the first time. Of course you're going to be a little confused. You're like, okay, you're telling me to take this, but this, but it doesn't quite work, or oh my God, I put a little too much, you know, or it's going to take time, you know. So I was thinking of this, like, oh, Pascal, it's not easy what you have to do, you know, to help people along, to learn how to be and how to use the research to make discoveries, you know. And plus, researchers, I don't know, I hear of them, I don't know, I might know some. But I certainly hear that sometimes it takes them years of research, no? Before they make a discovery. Okay, I just put this out there. It's important. You know, so there's a humility. You come to a research center. It's not like, hey, I want the discovery. Well, it might take a little time, you know, but you might learn a lot of things in a research center, you know. But So maybe I was saying this to myself, Pascal, it's okay, you're showing people the research center, you can't expect of yourself that, you know, everything will be revealed. You know, it doesn't work like this. Anyway, so we're studying through the four foundations. In a way, we could say there are different aspects of our reality that we get interested in. And what I was going to say is that what they all have in common, I think, is that they're happening in the present moment. It's good to define the field of research. To me, that's how I understand this practice. The field of research here, there's nuances to everything, but I think we could say the field of research is the present time. Echoes of the Buddha saying something like, hey, let go of the past. Don't focus on the past right now. The past is gone. It's non-existent anymore. Don't go towards the future. Don't think of the future. It's inexistent. It hasn't arisen. Put all your attention in what is presently arisen, what is here, what is here. And so he says, death is coming full speed. No time to lose. Very precious day. Very precious day at the lab center. Very precious day. Put all your attention on what is here, and you'll understand a lot of things, or can be understood. And so the first foundation or aspect of our experience that we're invited to put attention, give attention to, is, if it's been named already and you know this, you would probably come up with it if I was to ask you, name a few you think. So the first one is the body. Body is a kind of a code word. We could be mistaken, think, oh yeah, the body, it's this thing that is there, always there, solid, my body, I've had it for a few decades now, it seems like centuries sometimes, you know. But I say it's a code word to, it's pointing to something changing a lot, from moment to moment. You know, what we call the body, doesn't it feel different now than it felt a half hour ago? Is it a little different? Or not at all? The other one maybe was standing or outside in heat or coolness, you know? And this one here, right now, will probably feel different in 30 minutes, you know? Maybe a little bit more pressure on the butt or in the legs. Something like this. And so the first aspect of our experience that the Buddha very wisely, surprise, surprise, very wisely is inviting us to pay attention to. And he unpacks it by inviting us to be aware of breath. This is a bodily experience. Experience of the material realm, of the physical realm, expansions, contractions. There's life in it. And so there's an invitation, very classic. Pretty much anybody knows this. If they know one thing about meditation, they'll think it's related to breath. And so this is something that the Buddha invites us to pay attention to notice, to get acquainted with, to discover again and again the breath. It's happening now. The way he invites us to be aware of the body is through posture. It's like when you're sitting, just be aware that you're sitting. Just this. To me, that's revolutionary. Because when I'm sitting, usually that's the last thing in my mind that I'm sitting. Unless it starts to hurt, maybe. But in my mind will be 1,000 other things concepts, stories, you know? And then there's like, yeah, Pascal, you're in distress, you're in confusion. I understand. Just know you're sitting. Yeah, but the rest of my life, I'm gonna die. Just know you're sitting. Try this. Just establishing this knowledge, just make contact. Become aware. Become aware. I'm looking for my words here, sorry. Become aware that the body is not standing, it's not walking, it's not laying down, it's sitting. And see if you can just stay aware of this. It's not easy, yeah, for us. It's not easy. And just to give us a hint of what happens, maybe with just these two. I mean, many things can happen. I could spend hours describing what can happen, what discoveries can be made by just being aware of breath or being aware of posture. Being aware of breath, something that I noticed for myself. I could go in many directions, but something that I notice for myself very often is when I become aware of my breath, not very long after, I become aware of the state of mind, of the breather, the person breathing. You know, if I give myself this small little task or exercise to be with the breath a little bit, I'm going to discover that there's agitation or obsession or some kind of availability. I don't know how to describe this, but that I can be some kind of calm. I'm going to discover something about my mind state. It's just one thing that I've noticed over and over again. Just feel the body for a moment and then, oops, contraction in the chest. Oh yeah, there's anxiety here, or fear, or unrest. Or, oh, no, there's a clear sky, so to speak. So I'll discover something about this being here. This is just one thing. Being with the breath, I might discover the changing nature of experience, how a breath is such a momentary thing, such an ephemeral thing. Or staying with it, it might start with my breath. Oh, my breath. I have to be aware of my breath. My attention has to be on my breath, you know? And maybe on day 4, 5, or 6 of the retreat, it won't appear like this anymore. There'll be a slight transformation in view or perception. Suddenly it won't be me with my breath, but it'll be the breath. Do you see a slight difference in the breath, the attention, the agitation or the calm? It won't be so much about me. It won't be so appropriated, so identified, so So these are just a few things that could happen. There's so many other things that could happen. Maybe acceptance, just noticing that the breath is shallow or irregular. And, you know, after a while wanting another breath, maybe suddenly, naturally, something will give up. That's exhausting to want to breathe differently. Breathe as you breathe. And suddenly I'll discover something about mind state. Wanting to control is energy, énergivore in French. Energy costly. One thing, I won't have to tell myself this. It's just by being in a certain way with the breath, I might learn, there's another way to be less energy involved. Am I doing it right? Without it? Just saved a lot of energy. That's a kind of freedom right there. So that's being with the breath. just aware of the posture. When sitting, knowing you're sitting. I'll discover how much of the time I'm not there. I'm in some fiction, storytelling, some considerations about something else, you know. How much absence there is. This is maybe one discovery that I might make. So the Buddha talks about, in this first foundation, this first aspect of experience, he invites us to be aware of breath, to be aware of posture when walking, just knowing we're walking. It's an amazing way to actually develop steadiness of presence. So simple. Pascal, can you just stay aware that you're sitting? It's very delicate work to just remain aware I'm sitting. What will be revealed for me is all my addictions. Addictions to being busy, thinking about stuff, projecting, planning, rehashing. All these will be revealed. Are they for you? Let's be here and just know we're here. Suddenly, boredom. I've got to die of boredom. I'm addicted to stimulation. Give me something. Give me worry, please, something. You know? It'll be, all these things will be revealed. The Buddha talks about activities of the body. So saying, you know, when you're reaching out, when she's turning the head, when they're lowering the body, being aware of, being present. So being present to aware of breath, aware of posture, aware of activities. Washing hands, washing body, changing clothes, folding the bed, unfolding the bed, being there for this. And the Buddha talks about all the activities, none excluded, worth being there for it. That's not my habit. My habit is to do things habitually, to not give a generous attention, to not, and yet, when I do this, like, well, that fits in the posture, but crossing the corridor, this is like the never-ending corridor, depending on where your room is. I'm at the other end, so it's like in the movies, you know, when the corridor expands all the time. So I'm walking in the corridor, and it's a beautiful practice to actually be there, instead of wanting to be at the end of the corridor. And I can discover things about my mind, how my mind can get entangled in very small desire, like wanting to be at the end of the corridor. Misery can take very small forms. You know, if only, you know, I had reached the end of the corridor, everything would be solved in my life. See, like, I was talking about confused perception or erroneous perceptions with the lack of attention, erroneous perception. You could think, you know, when I get to the salad, to the counter, all my problems will be solved. Then you finally get there, you get the meal, you know, not everything is solved, is it? But yet I might be deluded in this way, to think that, oh God, just five people and everything will be solved. You know? It's delusion. And so the Buddha talks about activities of the body, inviting us to be there, particularly present to activities when we're moving things around. So that's, maybe I'll stop here. There's other ways that he talks about being attentive to the body, but as I'm doing this kind of survey or going over overview. I'll stop here. Another field, and we'll talk more about this over the days, another field of experience that is definitely or very important or to that we can become aware of, is this when there is an experience of pleasure, a pleasurable experience that happens. It can be in the body, it can be at any of the senses, a taste, a thought, it can be something seen. It happens here, doesn't it? That we meet what we perceive as beautiful in nature or space or sky, or maybe animal life, birds, or at the ear door. And so these aspects, they're presented as separate, but they're linked to each other. In French, we would say vase communicant. They're related to each other. And so the Buddha seems to say, hey, whenever you have a pleasurable experience, become particularly curious, particularly present to this experience, and see what appears about it, what will be noticed about it. Or if you have an unpleasant experience, it's a really good time to be present, because there's a lot to be discovered around this. Body experiences, breath, postures, activities of the body happen in present time. Try to feel your body 2 years ago. Try to feel your body next year. Not possible. So that's the entry point in the present time for the Buddha. Also more palpable. And then pleasure is something to be felt when it's happening here, now. And so that's an invitation to become aware of this, because in all these foundations, these aspects of our reality, we have different ways to create suffering, maybe for ourselves. Maybe we'll talk more about this, just giving a few hints. With body, there might be an identification, clinging as I or mine, you know. With pleasure, there might be a clinging to what is pleasurable. I want to get it, I want to have more of it, I want to keep it, I want it to be mine also. And if we pay attention to pleasure, we might notice as experiences of the body that they appear and disappear. Pleasure appears and disappears. And that's why we want an attention that really tunes in and stays, remains in connection, to see the pleasure arise and to see it vanish. There can be something extremely liberating to a mind that tends to cling to what feels comfortable or secure or mine or pleasurable. It's really good to notice how things arise and pass, because letting go can happen. Oh, it's in its nature to come and go. So can I experience this gracefully, the coming and going of pleasure, of displeasure? Oh. Very strong, unpleasant opinion crossing the mind, you know. Maybe I can just let it be recognized, be experienced, no? As says the instruction. What you have to do is not get rid of it, just experience it. Just experience it knowingly. Oh, strong view crossing the mind, strong desire crossing the mind, strong sensation crossing the butt. Wow, very intense, very disagreeable. Wow, let me get interested. Many discoveries I can make about my relationship to pleasure, displeasure. I won't even talk today about the absence of pleasure and displeasure and how we relate to this, what is called more like neutrality. in experience. So these are things that happened as we sit here, as we are in the dining room, doing the mindful movement, maybe being outside or in our rooms. These are things we find in the research center, in the retreat, but these are things we find in our lives also. When we will go back home, this is what we'll find. We'll find body in postures, we'll find activities of body, we'll find breath, we'll find experiences of pleasure and displeasure, won't we? Yes, we will. That's what our life is going to be made of. So here we have a chance, when displeasure arises, to maybe form a new relationship or explore how we tend to relate to displeasure. Close down, want to attack, collapse, get a strong opinion. Very natural, all these very, very natural. And so body, experiences of pleasure, displeasure, and another field, another foundation, the third one, body being the first, the second one being these experiences of pleasure, displeasure, or their absence. A third field is the mind, not the body, but what happens in the mind or heart or psyche in present time. Not like, oh, back then, I was so happy. No. Past, gone, future, not arrived. Put all your attention in the presently arisen mind state, mood, qualities of mind, emotion. What's happening in there? As when you hear me say, for example, what's the state of the meditator? Maybe I've said that here a couple of times. Notice the state of the meditator. Very different way to relate to the mind. Instead of being in the mind state, impatient, things are not going fast enough around here, you know? Or discouragement, this is never going to work out for me, everybody else will get it except me, you know? Instead of being caught under the spell, very natural that we would be, very natural that all these emotions would show up, very natural that we would be, you know, under occupation, preoccupied by these, that we would see the world, our situation or ourselves or our relationships through these emotions, fear, worry, or calm, or gratitude, or curiosity, emotions, moods, qualities of mind, afflictive ones, beneficial ones. And so the Buddha's invitation is for us to notice the mind states. And so as we've been here up to now, you know, I've talked a lot about this in different ways, you know. Just notice the first evening, that's what comes to mind just now. The first evening, I was like, hey, as you're sitting here, notice how you feel. How you feel about being in this place here. You know, is there lightness for you? Oh, back at Loyola, back on retreat. Oh, I've been wanting to do this for a long time, you know. When back then, when it seemed still like a good idea. 48 hours ago. You know? So I invited you to notice, what's your mindset? Or maybe there's some fear, some ambivalence at being here. So instead of being in the spell, in the trance of the mind state, becoming aware of. So third foundation, aware of the mind, the quality of the mind, or call it heart, if it resonates more for you, or psyche, the quality. The attitude is one expression that is sometimes used. And so we can become aware of this. Oh my God! Oh, wave of impatience, suddenly, strong wave of frustration. Whoa, hot, hot. It's felt in the body, it's unpleasant. Or quiet, quiet. Oh, not just the sounds, but the quality of the mind receiving the sounds. Sometimes we're here experiencing something, but we want to experience something else. It can be noticed as it's happening, instead of being just under the spell to become aware of strong desire. To me, that was, if I go back then to this first retreat and the first years of practice, one experience that I had often, very often, back then, maybe I'll put it this way, I think it's very rare that maybe I don't have it anymore, but at least I could definitely say it's very rare that I have that emotion these last number of years. But back in the first years of practice, an emotion that I had very often, that I learned to become aware of as it was happening, was the desire to not be. You know, strong desire, some of us experience this, I think, at times or maybe regularly. Not to sometimes it's be somebody else, somewhere else, experience something else. But sometimes it's just to not experience anything. To not be me, to not be in the world, to not be, you know. I put it in words, but it was much more vague than strong. But not defined, maybe in these terms exactly. And through the practice of mindfulness, knowing, experiencing consciously, knowingly, this third aspect that I'm naming here is to become aware. Oh, wanting to not be. It's very different. Would you agree? Than being under the spell of. Being really identified, like, I don't want to be, I just don't want to be here, I don't want to exist, or I want to be somewhere else, I want to be back home with the cat, you know. This is all I want in life, be back home. And, you know, deluded, not knowing that when I'll be back home, I'll be as miserable as I was before I came here. You know? But no, right now it seems extremely satisfying to be back home, you know. And so being under the spell of this is one thing, is a particular experience. Not wanting this emotion or mood is another way to be in relationship. I don't want this. I don't want to feel grumpy. I don't want the hatred. I don't want the rage. I don't want the resentment. So either being under the spell of, that's one extreme in Buddhist thinking, you could say. Another extreme is to hate the state, not want it. For me, these are the two options I had before. Either I was caught in the confusion or self-hatred, or I hated the self-hatred or the confusion. Do you recognize something for you? And then there's this learning. Wow. Learning that I can be aware of a mind state, not under the spell of it, not rejecting it and fighting with it. No! Stop telling me that I'm worth nothing. I won't have it, you know. It's exhausting to debate, to fight with the mind state. I don't want to feel you, you know. But is it possible to actually recognize, name what is happening and feel it? Feel the discouragement. Name, discouragement feels like this. It feels exactly like this. It has a particular flavor. Become interested in the mind state. Not easy, but doable. This is the third aspect that the Buddha talks about. When he talks about, or when you hear about, you know, the four foundations of mindfulness, what attention could become interested in order to develop wisdom, discernment, compassion, appreciation. And so, I don't know if it works for you, but it works really well for me. I'm hearing my teacher, Joseph Goldstein, When he does a talk, often he'll repeat the things again and again. It's a way to, it's pedagogy. So it's a way to teach, a way to learn. And so, what are we invited to bring our careful attention to? The experiences of the body, breathing, postures, very simple. Connecting with this, body resting, staying with this. I could take off, but next week, body resting, fear, contraction. So awareness of breath, of posture, or activities of the body. Awareness of experiences of pleasure when they arise, or their absence. What is it to be in the absence of pleasure? Or right after pleasure has vanished? The experience of displeasure. Can we bring careful attention to this? Here's an opportunity for practice, Pascal. This is not fun. This is not what I expected or wanted. This is not what would be my preference. Let's pay close attention here. Painful to hear this, to feel this. Painful. So interesting. Pain is probably going to be experienced again in this lifetime. Better get acquainted with it. See if I can be with this. Create a new kind of relationship with displeasure, disappointment. And becoming aware of mind states, qualities of mind, of moods, as they're happening. For example, we don't need to look any further. There is a mind state here now. Different, slightly for every one of us, but part of human nature. All of these that I've named up to now, do you recognize they're part of human nature? Postures, breath, activities of body, experiences of pleasure, displeasure, their absence, mind state. There's a mind state here. For some of us, it's interested. For some of us, it's not interested anymore. It was good for the first 20 minutes or so, but now, no judgments. We can become aware of this. Bored to death. Wanting to be at mealtime now. Okay, I participated, I listened. Let's go to the meal now. Can we? So if there's slight impatience or resistance, just naming it. Resistance. Maybe recognize it if it's possible. Mm-hmm. And becoming interested, how it's felt in the body. So the mind state. And there's a fourth foundation. There's many ways to talk about this. There's many aspects of it, maybe very interesting. So if you're in a research center, we'll say there's a whole other section. There's a lot of very fine experience to make of this, but we won't go there today or this week. Would you accept this? No. So one way to talk about this, one very simple way to talk about this fourth foundation, just for the sake of today or this talk, I'll say, and just to inspire us and intrigue us, I'll say, the Buddha, for this fourth aspect, he changes a little bit the rules of the game. So there's the body and the different way we can be attentive to it. There's the experiences of pleasure, displeasure. There's the mind state. And then in the fourth one, the Buddha says, I'm inviting you to be really attentive on how you can go from afflictive emotions to liberating ones or beneficial ones, or how you can go from affliction, what's this journey, how it can be implemented. It's interesting, no? It's not just mind state. It's beautiful to just be aware of mind state. But then it says there's more subtle art that we'll discover, and we will discover this year. I'll talk more about this. How to go from affliction, how to accompany the mind from affliction to what? Balance or acceptance, or how to change the way we're relating to what's happening. Like this kind of, I almost want to say alchemy. You know, an example would be, there's a, maybe I feel a pain in the leg or knee. There's strong sensations of maybe piercing or kind of seem relentless. And so there's a sensation. So if I think in terms of the four foundations, I could discover, oh, you know, I'm sitting and there's a sensation here. This can be known. It can be known. Oh, it's disagreeable. Let me be really interested in this. This is disagreeable. Let me come closer if I can, if it's possible. You know, if there is enough courage in the field, or, you know, space or interest, or, you know, maybe I can come around, oh yeah, throbbing, or piercing, disagreeable, how interesting. Maybe I'll discover the fear or the projection, I'll discover the mind state. The mind state might be, the mind state could be annoyance or fear, no? Don't want, resistance, aversion, don't want to feel, hate this, despise this sensation, you know? So I might discover this, oh, there's the sensation itself and the quality of the mind that resists or push or is annoyed by. Ah, I can wake up to this. So here I have three foundations. The body, the displeasure that is present, the mind state that meets it, and then the fourth foundation would be the discovering over time, in the course of the week or years of practice, to discover how I can, there can be this alchemy, so natural that something painful would lead to aversion, resistance, despising. Doesn't it make sense? When we're sensitive, we respond really well to what is easeful and comfortable. And when it's uncomfortable, it makes sense that the mind would get resistant. Yet, there's a kind of possibility that the mind, that maybe the pain would lead to quietness, to curiosity, to interest, to acceptance, to compassion, to tenderness, maybe to joy, who knows? That's really interesting. This is really the stuff of liberation. How, you know, you hear something you didn't want to hear, bad news. Of course, collapse inwardly, of course, get all rigid, and it makes sense that it would do this. That's really intriguing in terms of freedom. How can there be, you know, a bad news? And how could we help our mind to relate to it in a way that would not be so aggravating? That where what would be called in or invited in that we could go towards would be maybe sometimes courage, or again acceptance, or creativity. Creative response, or maybe sometimes playfulness. Oh, voila, everything went wrong. You know? How could that be? So this is the In a way, in a short version, what the Buddha was inviting us to become aware of, and this is very natural in the course of practice. We will discover this in a natural way, in an intuitive way. By just paying attention, we'll discover different ways to hold situation, you know, the bell not ringing, for example, when I would like it to ring, you know. I have to go through a few, like, ring the darn bell inside, you know, like tantrum, inner tantrum. I go through a few of these, and maybe at some point, it seems like a really costly way to be in relationship with the lack of control here over the bell, you know. And so at some point, very naturally, there's something like, oh, maybe I'll just... I'm putting it in words, but it becomes very embodied, lived, intuitive. That kicks in courage, determination, patience as a better way to meet the situation. We find this for naturally, by ourselves. That's the best way I can put it right now. Through quality contact, that's mindfulness, a quality contact with events, we'll naturally find what's the best way to hold this situation or feeling or thing. This is what we're doing here. It's vipassana. It's one of the kinds of wisdom, one of the kinds of understanding, of discernment, that we start to understand from a felt, in a felt way, not in a concept, oh, I should be more like this. No, it's by experiencing it that we start to notice what is a helpful way to be with this. And it's trial and error. So I'll do maybe the walking in boredom, can't do this, hate this, hate this. And at some point, for some reason, there will be a little interest. Steppings. Wow, that's so different. It's still the same walking, but it's so different. What's the difference? Oh, it's the mind state. So I'll become sensitive to the different textures of mind states. You know, maybe I'll finish with this one example. For me is I would go on retreat, probably still do, a lot less, I've learned. But the mind state would be opinions. So I would sit there and have opinions. And at the beginning they seemed like really pleasant. I'm right, they're wrong. They don't know how to hold a retreat. They don't know how to do this. I know. You know, with the superficial attention, it seemed like a really good way to live. But through soaking over time in opinions, you know, sometimes I started to notice something. Well, it's actually quite costly. And there's a downside to being right, you know, all the time. You know, it's kind of lonely at the top. You know, I started noticing there was a cost, you know, there was a cost to it, you know. And suddenly, very slowly, very through just being aware of posture, being aware of walking, being aware of breathing, started to notice mind state, oh, opinion, right again, right, you know. And kind of started to see, oh, that's not intelligence. It appeared. I was deluded. It appeared as I'm intelligent. I know better than anybody else, maybe. Or maybe for you, the intelligence seemed to show as a self-hatred. There's a higher intelligence that knows you're a piece of shit. And it's happy to tell you, to remind you, you're never going to succeed at this. Like you never succeeded at anything, by the way. You know, it might be mistaken. That kind of mind state might be mistaken for wisdom, for intelligence. And by bringing high quality attention, we'll start to notice, this is not my friend. This is not helpful. And maybe we'll touch for just a moment benevolence. We might touch it inside ourselves, or it might be transmitted. We might meet it somewhere. through somebody serving us food, and suddenly we'll be really present to benevolence, experience it. And the mind, the heart, the system, vipassana, deep understanding, embodied in the, something we'll understand that has more value. That has more value than abuse, abusive speech. Slowly we'll clarify how to hold, how to be in relationship with events, with environment, relations, and with what's happening inside. So these are the domain for the quail story. So what is the domain? What is happening here now in body, in terms of pleasure, displeasure, their presence and their absence, how this is met, held, encountered. The presently arisen mind state. And starting to discern which mind states bring peace, ease, are beneficial for me and others, can be cultivated. Which one and how some can be released, not entertained, not cultivated. Oh, I'm not going to stay here. I notice resentment, telling the story, wishing harm to somebody for what they said or did. Actually, I'm going to shy away from this. I could easily just keep on nurturing this, but maybe I'll come back to the breath, the nose, as the first instructions said. Let's sit here for just a moment. Or stand. There's a body here. It's worth being experienced. There might be areas of displeasure or pleasure, ease or discomfort. Can they be acknowledged with care, with honesty, with maybe with calm, with balance. And there's a mind state. Can it be recognized? Or at least felt? Oh, it feels like this right now, just like this. Being mindful is a very, very healthy, onward-leading quality of mind, or mind state, or attitude. May this quality of attention and these four domains become where and how we hang out. And may they lead to great discoveries. Okay, thank you. Thank you so much for your consideration. Enjoy the meal and all its foundations.